From UCB Comedy Studios West in Los Angeles, California, this is the UCB Digital Podcast. Hey, everybody. I'm UCB Comedy Creative Director Nate Russell. Yes, you heard right. We're recording out of sunny Los Angeles today in the brand new podcasting facility at UCB Comedy Studios West here at the Sunset location of UCB. Beautiful space. And today we had a really interesting conversation with Alex Ferney. Alex is a Guild Triple Threat. He's a SAG member, Writers Guild of America member, and a Directors Guild of America member. And he's got a pretty broad experience base in all three of those areas. We talked to Alex about his evolution from an improviser and an actor into writing, into directing, both for the web and for television. And he has a pretty unique perspective on approaching comedy as a director with a lot of experience on all sides of his guild membership. Let's jump right into it in our conversation with Alex Ferney. Alex, thanks for doing this.
My pleasure.
So I guess I think I wind up asking this question a lot at the very beginning. But as you, of these podcasts, as you sort of like present yourself to the world, because you have such a diverse sort of like skill set and resume, how do you present yourself as like, what do you do for a living?
It depends on who I'm talking to.
Sure.
And sometimes it'll be as simple as like, I'm a comedian or I work in comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'll say I'm a director. Sometimes I'll say I'm a writer. Sometimes I'll mush it all together. And it sort of will really depend on that audience and what I think will make the most sense to them. Because mm-hmm. you say director to certain people and they react one way. You say, oh, I'm a comedian, certain people, and they just turned it off. Like, I sort of play it on a situation-to-situation basis.
Mm-hmm. But as far as, like, so I guess let me ask you this then. When a project comes your way, what is the sort of determining factor for you and your interest in it? Is it role or is it project?
It's a little bit, but like, I'm most likely... The main thing will be is if I think there's something interesting about it, and that can be a couple of different ways. And then I'll do whatever. If I think it's interesting and they want me to direct or write or be in it, then I'll just say yes. But that's sort of the main thing, I think. If it's, you know, the for directing in particular, which isn't anything that like I explicitly set out to do, it tends to be, okay, is this something I haven't really done before? Is it something new?
Mm-hmm.
Is it with people that I actively want to work with? And then occasionally and very rarely, it'll just be like, oh, well, you know, I will do this because it would be stupid not to if I have to pay rent.
Sure.
But the main thing I think is that element of like, yeah, I haven't really done something like this before. That'd be a good experience for me. So I'll say yes to that. That probably goes for writing too, I think.
Sure. We did that panel like last month at Emerson mm-hmm. together. And I remember you saying, something to the extent of that, Funny or Die was really like your film school experience.
That's right.
So I guess like walk me through that and what that sort of like, what that experience was for you. How'd you get in there and what was that experience?
I started at Funny or Die. Oh gosh, now I'm having a hard time remembering what year. Maybe like 2010 or something like mm-hmm. that. And basically, before that, I had been performing a bunch at UCB and writing a bunch at UCB. I had had a pilot we shot for me and Alex Berg and Todd Fasten for Comedy Central that didn't go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I got brought in there on a one-off job. For this weird ad campaign. It was right about when people started going to, say, Funny or Die and places to do ads for them.
Sure.
And Axe Body Spray wanted to do a web series with Funny or Die. And so they brought me in. I believe Joe Wengert went in. Dave Ferguson was involved. And just to sort of help them write this Axe Body Spray series of things. And they were like, oh, it's going to be great. It's going to be, you know, everything you think about Axe commercials, it's not going to be that. It's going to be totally different. be fun. Okay, great. You went in and like I was super broke. And it was fun. And they were of course, line. Not Funny or Die, the Axe people. Funny or Die was great. About like, oh, it's everything. It's like, right. Oh, we'll get some more girls in there.
Yeah.
And so we working on that a little bit. And then they kind of kept me on to do sort of freelancey sort of stuff before they offered me that job. And that came from just them knowing me from performing with Convoy and Sentimental Lady.
So you'd already gone through like, so I guess like your career to that point had been on the sort of like performing and writing side.
Yeah.
And you'd gone through like some pretty intense development process as well, right? If you've got a pilot that goes to Comedy Central, that's probably prolonged.
And it was, I would say up until that point, like I was writing stage stuff and I was trying to write other stuff, but it was mainly performance because even our Comedy Central pilot came from, when the writer's strike happened. Convoy was doing Cage Match out here, and we did Cage Match for a while. And because people couldn't work, Tomlin and Ben Grant started coming to see shows, and they started to come see Cage Match, and they saw us, and we got to know them, and they're like, okay, well, we'll introduce you to like our management people, and then we'll try to figure out something to do with you guys. And very quickly, we ended up meeting with Comedy Central and selling them this improvised show that was Reno 911-esque. And then they bought it, and then it took a long time to make for what it was, and then they ended up passing on it. But like that was sort of that first thing. It happened incredibly quickly, and all stemming from just that the Cage Match show and from Ben and Tom being very generous to us.
And that's out now, right? Is it out? Did I see that they posted that on Nerdist?
No, that was something
different. That's something different.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know who owns ours. Ours is called Most Deadliest Show. Maybe we own it. That thing that got posted on Nerdist, Tom posted a couple of old pilots. Then the original Reno 911 pilot is very different than the show. A show called Neighbors or Hey Neighbors.
Yeah.
And then a different pilot I did for FX, just as an actor with them, that's improvised. Based on like Star Trek.
Okay, cool.
So that was like my main like experience with the industry or anything, and it was very lucky for us. We just got to do it, and we had this little bit of protection from Ben and Tom, and we got to make something that was really fun, and I learned a ton about that. But that was kind of it, and that was even that, because it was improvised, it wasn't like normal level of writing. It was mainly as performers and improvisers. So by the time I got to Funny or Die, I'd like done a couple pilots as an actor and done that. But Funny or Die was the first job I had where it's like, we are hiring you as a writer. And I was like, okay, well, that's great. That sounds fun. I'd done a bunch of sketch on stage and I liked that. And Berg and I as well had been doing just sort of shitty web videos ourselves. We just tried to put up one a week just to like learn and make stuff.
And you guys are doing all that sort of like soup to nuts, the whole thing?
Yeah. Yeah. Just like, cool. Look like garbage. It was, most of them were terrible. And every now and then we'd find one was like, that's kind of funny. And I think that was part of Funny or Die hiring me as well. And then when I got hired by Funny or Die, I realized, oh, the way it worked then, and I think it's different now, is that it was just a free-for-all at Funny or Die. And you would just go to work there as a writer, and if you didn't direct your own stuff, probably your stuff would never get made. So I very quickly learned, oh, I have to figure out how to direct, otherwise nothing I ever write will ever see the light of day.
How were you supported in that? Was it like, so you, is it a writer's room? Are you writing on your own?
Like you would, at that time, and again, this was years ago, I think it's a very different system now. At that time, Funny or Die was super based around celebrities doing videos.
Sure.
There's much less of that at the site now. So it'd be, okay, every week you'd have a couple celebs would come in and you'd go, okay, we got to pitch to Lenny Kravitz, and so the writer's room would be all the writers sitting around pitching Lenny Kravitz their funny ideas, and he'd go, oh, I want to do that one, and then that's the one that would end up getting made.
Yeah.
In addition to, you could kind of just do your own weird stuff. So you could just write a thing, I want to do this, and if it's cheap enough, they'll go, yeah, okay, go do it.
And then where would it go from there? So you're saying you'd have to direct it. Would you have to sort of like put together the whole production, or were you supporting?
No, there were producers there that would help you do that, would kind of get assigned to it. And like, super talented people that I loved working with, like Betsy Koch, Allie Horde, who's around in the UCB world. She was a producer there for a long time. Rachel Goldenberg.
Cool.
People who are very very creative in their own regard. So it wasn't just sort of like, oh, they're just there to make numbers make sense. They would help you make the thing that you wanted to make. And over my 3 years there, that became film school for me. From like the first thing I ever did was a video with Jackie Clark and Johnny Meeks as like NPR, the people during a pledge drive. And like, that was the first thing I ever did.
Mm-hmm.
And it's shot like a stage show. It looks exactly the way you would stage it if you did it at UCB Franklin. And then it took 3 years for me to kind of go like, oh, but what if a camera moved? That'd be nice, wouldn't it? And like, and slowly I had to sort of that. Also from the other people worth it that were super talented, like sure. Scott Gardner or Danny Jelinek.
So that sort of like evolution for you, like, was very organic to like making a lot of things, learning from the process and sort of like trying out new things.
Yeah, I think so. Like, and I think that might be the reason I approach the stuff the way I approach things now, which was that was very much about, okay, well, what's interesting about this and what's new about this to me?
Because
mm-hmm. It was Funnier Die. And even though I was salaried there and I was able to, you know, live off that, it wasn't sort of like, okay, I'm buying a house. So money never really factored into it. You didn't really own these things. So it was very much just about, hey, let's just make something and let's see what I can do and see if I can make it interesting and yeah. see if I can make it myself laugh. And one of the great things about working there at that time was it was not, there was like minimal, like, oh, you got to search engine optimize it. There's like, oh, there was an element of, okay, you got to keep up with the news. And if this is a big news story, we got to do a video about it.
Right.
But there was nothing while I was there that rarely did I run into something. I was like, ugh, okay. You know, every now and then it would be like, oh, a teen star would come in and we have to do a video with them. But it was never that sort of like, put a question in the subject of it and they have to click it. And then it's just that, you know, there was none of that sort of clickbaity stuff really going on at that time. So you could just be like, this is for an audience of two. And they were okay.
They were okay with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that sort of lets you sort of like try out a bunch of different things, I would assume.
Yeah, it did. I still, one of the videos I really liked that was really just for me, Michaela Watkins and Rob Delaney were in it, and it literally the premise was just Ayn Rand has a late night talk show,
mm-hmm.
And she's just very dour and aggressive and angry about everything, and Watkins is super funny in it to me, and it's not really for anybody. Yeah. Like, it wasn't like this is really tapping into this, and if you like there's not a lot of like random click-throughs you're going to do to find that video.
Yeah.
But they were super supportive of it. And so that allowed, I think, me to kind of figure out a little bit of what a voice and an aesthetic would mm-hmm. be for me in that regard.
Are there other sort of like aspects of production skills that you picked up in that process, or was it pretty much still exclusively on like a directing and writing side? Did you have to edit it all or produce?
I didn't have to edit. Like it'd be great if I knew how to edit. It would be very helpful, but I don't. Mm-hmm. Although at Funnier Die, I was happy I didn't know how to edit because you get roped into
doing all
of
it.
Stuff.
Yeah, I'm sure.
but one of the main things I think that taught me was you did have to look at things on a producer level, right? Because it was a small crew and it was incredibly cheap and it was incredibly fast.
Mm-hmm.
And everything I've done since has, in general, been incredibly cheap and incredibly fast. And I think that meshes more with, I don't think it necessarily comes from pure necessity. I don't know another way to work. I come out of an improv background, and that's sort of what I like doing. So mm-hmm. if it's that, or if it's Children's Hospital, or if it's Hot Wives, or whatever, it's all that same idea of doing this, as funny as we can, as quickly as we can. We're not going to waste time. We're not going to spend a lot of time tweaking every little thing. Instead, we're going to get the best version of this that we can. And I think that came out of Funnier Die, just being able to work within very limiting constraints and still making it work.
And what happened? So you were there for like 4 years?
For three or four years? Half, yeah.
So what was the sort of like, what transitioned you out of that?
At the end of Funnier Die, I left to go work on NTSF SDSUV on Adult Swim.
Okay. So a job.
A job.
Cool.
I had done some stuff with Paul Scheer. I knew him from the theater, and then I'd done some stuff with him at Funnier Die,
uh-huh.
and they were doing a web series for in between seasons of one of the NTSF seasons. And so myself and Nick Weiger wrote it, and I directed it, and then they liked it. And so then they brought both Nick and I on as writers and directors for the third season of NTSF. So I left to go do that.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
So that's very sort of like organic transition then.
Yeah. And it's not, NTSF was super fun. They, a typical Funny or Die shoot and a typical, Adult Swim shoot like that are different, but they're not wildly different mm-hmm. beasts. It's still, you're making the most of what you have. And if your vision is A, but we only have access to B, then you go, okay, how can I best do what A was, but in the context of B?
Right.
And I think that's one of the reasons I work Abominable, which does NTSF, and they did Newsreaders, and they do Children's Hospital, and they do a bunch of stuff like that. I think tends to work in that same way of, hey, let's put on a show sort of sense,
mm-hmm.
Which I tend to like a lot. And it's more interesting to me than just the, like sort of a work a day. Okay, you show up every day and you shoot it and yep. everyone gives it their best 70% and then you head home.
Sure. Was there a scale difference when you made that transition that was noticeable?
Yeah. I mean, Funny or Die, like every now and then, like there are big Funny or Die productions.
Yeah.
And again, I think it's wildly different now. I think they just don't do as much video as they used to, or at least it fair. Seems like it.
It seems like their priorities are shifting in terms yeah. of they're trying to do more bigger things.
Yeah, they're trying to do more bigger things. They very much want to do TV. They got Billy on the Street and they've yeah. got At Midnight and stuff. But at the time, it was like 5, 6, 7 videos that they would push sincerely every week. And some of them would be huge. Like Between Two Ferns, even though it looked small, that would be kind of a bigger deal. And then you do, there a lot of times there are big trailers that would happen and stuff like that. And those would be pretty akin to what I'd say like a day on NTSF would be like. Most of the stuff wasn't that. Most of that was like you'd shoot something in one day mm-hmm. in as few locations as possible, as efficiently as possible. So like jumping up to an actual, there's real Crest Services. It's not Togo's.
Sure.
And there's the ability to do a few more takes, and there's the ability to just sort of get more angles, and art department isn't, pulling their hair out because yeah. you get two flats and a desk, like that. That was great because you can just play around a little bit more. Yeah.
I would guess that in a way, art would be one of the bigger differences between the two.
Yeah, and Funny or Die, some of the production people and the art people worked with are. Were just insane. Like how good they were.
In a good way.
Yeah, yeah. Oh yeah. Like
no, absolutely.
There were a couple. Ellie Del Campo and Martín Vallejo. I worked with a bunch, and they were great. And Katie Birmingham, like just people who could. You could go, hey, here's this dumb 3-page sketch, and I need a White House, and they go, oh, hold on, and then in 12 hours they go like, we can do this, and it would be better than what you had imagined.
Right.
And again, that comes, I think, from Berg and I would be like, okay, we have a light and a bookshelf. What can we do? So I'd be like, that was a thrill every time.
Yeah.
But it's nice to be able to go like, no, we can get a location if we need it. We can go somewhere, if we need it to make this thing. And that's one of the bigger scaled things, I think, as well.
Yeah. And as far as like your approach, like, so I guess like that, so that transition is what sort of like is the, I mean, that was only 2014. So it's like, that's been your trajectory since, is like work for hire director on some of these productions and writer as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So like that was, so it was 20, what year was that? Maybe 2013. I forget. But so yeah, since then, it's been sort of, I've done a couple of pilots that I've written that yeah. end up not going anywhere. I'm good at writing pilots that they end up deciding they don't want. And I've worked sort of as a director, being hired as a director. And a lot of times it's with people from the sort of UCB world or yeah. from that comedy world.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's the thing I think that links NTSF and Children's Hospital and the Hot Wives series. The show I'm working on right now, just called Bajillion Dollar Properties, which mm-hmm. Kulap Vlasek created. It's all very much comedy first, comedy centric. This is the top priority thing.
Sure.
And what I get from a lot of those is that sort of you tend to have to go fast because people don't throw a lot of money at that. And that there are a lot of very talented comedy directors, and there are a lot of very talent directors who work in comedy, but the thing is a lot of times they are people who approach it from maybe directing first, comedy second. And because I didn't go to film school, that wasn't my main goal. I tend to approach things from comedy first.
Yeah.
What's the funniest thing that we do here? And I think that's something that isn't always around. It's nothing you hear people say a lot who work with a guy like Eric Appel, who mm-hmm. does a lot of sitcom directing. And like that's, you know, he's got elements of that too, where he approaches, okay, well, what's the funniest thing? He can pitch out jokes and alts and ways to sort of amp up the comedy.
Sure.
And, you know, Peter Atencio might be the best of both worlds at that. You know, he directed almost every bit of Key and Peele. And the guy's just so visually good, but also funny,
mm-hmm.
which is a great thing to combine.
So I guess that's an interesting thing to lead into the next question I had for you, because you're saying that your approach is comedy centric first. So I guess like you get us like at this point, you like you get a script, you get like you get onto an episode of a show. Mm-hmm. What is your approach as a director that gets you through the production?
Normally, one of my main things, and I think it goes back to just being an improv guy, is that I'm really big on the collaboration of it. Mm-hmm. I don't really get directors who are sort of play it as a be all end all of my way, and everyone just does what I say.
Mm-hmm.
So normally, if I were to get the script, if it would be Children's or something like that, Children's already has a certain element of a informed aesthetic. You already know kind of what the show is, but they break that frequently. So there's the possibility sometimes like, oh, well, this one's a sci-fi movie, so we have to do it different.
Sure.
But the approach to that would be going through the script and going, okay, great. First thing is just sort of like, great, what's funny about this tends to be my first reading of it. And then once selling that, going, okay, great. Well, what's the funniest way to present that?
Mm-hmm.
For all those other elements of it, I like working with a DP that, because I have no technical training or skill or know-how. I like working with a DP who I can explain what I'm going for, and then they can tell me what I mean.
Sure.
But also that will say, let me pitch you a better way to do it. Same thing with art department, same thing with wardrobe. Yep. Like it normally is, here's all my first thoughts on this, and then being incredibly open to, but what if
sure
it was this instead?
I bet that they would like that too, because it's again a collaboration, something where skills are being valued.
Yeah. I just don't understand, because I mean, everyone knows directors who don't approach it that way, and I truly can't understand that. Like the, you know, a great wardrobe person will know better than I 9 times out of 10. And if I can convey them, here's what I think the big picture is, and here's what I was thinking for this, 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 and this, then to me, the next step should be, so you tell me what you think the best way to achieve that is.
Right.
And it shouldn't be me going, so do this, 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 and this, and then getting angry when you can't read my mind.
Mm-hmm.
It should be, well, let's work together. And the same thing with DP, same thing with every department. I don't know how common that is. I think, you know, I've definitely worked on other ends as writers or actors with directors who are that way and others who are not.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, that's the most important and interesting thing, is conveying what you want it to be like, and then listening to how other people think we can best achieve that.
Right. I mean, it kind of sounds like you're bringing, like, it's not unrelated from the approach to improv, the way you're talking about, because I think that sometimes people who don't behave that way, it's because they don't trust the other person's idea.
Yeah. And I'm sure there's plenty of people where it's an ego element.
Yeah, no, for sure. But that's also about not trusting somebody.
Yeah. And I think there is, because like that's, you know, the, you know, that's why I've been doing improv for years and years and years, and it still do, you know, I'll have a shoot and I'll still show up at 11:30 to do an improv show.
Mm-hmm.
Is because that is the most satisfying creation to me. I can sit at home and just write by myself, and I do, but other people have to have fingerprints. And if you want to just do it yourself, if you want to have complete, absolute control, then write a novel. But I think film and TV and comedy on stage, pretty much everything but, you know, one person stand up is collaborative.
Sure.
And I think that's kind of the beauty and the fun of it. Like, even if you look at someone, if you look at like Stanley Cooper, hundreds of people work on the Stanley Kubrick movie.
Had to.
Or, yeah. Right, yeah. It's one of the reasons I get real cranky old man when I see like online fan theories about, oh, here's what every little piece of The Shining means. Be like, no, I don't think that. I think that actually devalues the art to a certain degree.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is, and any movie, any episode of TV is, no matter how good it is. Like, I think You're the Worst is one of the best television shows on, I think it's one of the best comedies on TV.
Great.
And that's a collaborative work. The actors bring something. It's shot incredibly well. The writers instill these characters with something you buy in. Every element of that works together to create one whole.
Mm-hmm.
To assign that to anybody, I think, diminishes the amazingness that it got created.
I think that's a really healthy way to look at it. Because it is a collaborative medium.
Yeah.
For you, when you do approach like your role in that process, do you storyboard? Do you like how extensively do you shot list? Like, what's your approach there?
Not super extensively. Uh-huh. I've rarely had to storyboard. I'm sure if there were bigger people, also don't. I'm not the guy to go to for like, okay, there's 10 huge action set pieces. Figure it out. I'll shot list stuff out in a way that is mainly just for me to remember how I envisioned it when I read it.
Yeah.
And in ways that I think is vexing to most DPs I work with, because it doesn't make much sense, and I'll just completely switch abbreviations halfway through. And but I'll sort of go through and it'll be mainly for me of like, this is how I can imagine this being. And then on the day we'll throw it out the first
just
chance
gone.
Of needing to. Yeah. With the exception of big things, there'll be normally elements where it's like, okay, I think we should really do it this way. Being open to going, okay, well, now that we're in this space and we see where the sun is, mm-hmm. and you know what, this room is way narrower than we remembered it being, let's just change it all up. That tends to be the way that we approach that. And something like Children's Hospital, which is the most probably one of the more well-oiled machines of shows I've worked on recently, you know, that was one where we could kind of more likely, we built a whole new set. I was the first director up this season. So like, it was our first time shooting in there. So I, you know, basically was like, okay, this is how I think this will go. And then we'd be in the location and be like, no, okay. Yeah, this is different than what we had sort of envisioned. So then we'll change this, this, and this, and this,
sure.
But the basic skeleton of it would still be there. Also from the improv point of view, depending, a lot of these shows are not crazy tight on say the lines exactly as they're written.
Sure.
So for a lot of these shows, I like to shoot two or three camera, A, for speed, but mm-hmm. B, also so that there will be nothing that we can't use if we need to.
Yeah.
Because we'll always have the cut if we need it.
How active are you in the process of like, I guess, like, how's that collaboration for you with actors in terms of being loose with the script?
That's probably the thing I most enjoy.
Yeah.
And that is probably the thing I'm most hands-on in of. I've been fortunate to work on shows where they're very open to me going, you know what? Try this line instead of that line. Or tweak it this way and giving it that and trying to get people to find a stuff that was funny that we didn't necessarily know hidden in there. And then B, just alts. Like, I like being able to play around with that.
Mm-hmm.
And getting to work with actors is, I think, the most fun element of working together with them to get to a place that is better than what you would do on your own or they would do on their own.
Sure.
Just sort of being able to talk that through and like get to a point of like, oh, great, that fourth take was new and that's the one we're going to use.
And does part of that also have to do, it also seems like you're in a place in a lot of these shows where you already have a relationship with at least some of the people involved in the creative side. That also must benefit that collaboration.
It helps if they already think I'm funny
right.
in some way, because then they'll trust me not to just toss out terrible, terrible ideas.
Sure.
And I think that's a lot of the people who end up hiring me is just someone that I've worked with in one way or another. And then they're like, oh yeah, great. Okay. So he kind of knows what he's doing and he's funny and we want this show to be funny. So maybe he'd be someone that we'd bring in and be able to work with.
Is there at this point as well? So are these shows all, are you Directors Guild?
Yes.
You're Directors Guild. And so when you work on a show like that, how is that? Because there are specific points of input on shows.
Yeah,
right?
There's all sorts of rules I don't really understand. Like the guild is, the DJ has been pretty great. They've been very open and verbal and not pain in the ass to get in touch with me on YouTube. But I don't usually need to. A lot of these shows I work on fall into weird areas. Because it's not Brooklyn Nine-Nine. It's not a half-hour network sitcom. A number of them are 11 and a half minutes, and that slots them into something different. Now with streaming rising, Hot Wives is like Roger Corman level cheap and fast because it's streaming, but it's still Guild. The show I'm working on right now for CISO, same thing, it's streaming, so it's a little bit different than that. So they tend to be very open to helping you make things. I would say in my experience, they've been very much as to what you would hope a guild would be, which is making sure no one's getting taken advantage. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Well, then we'll kind of lean back and stay out of your hair. And again, I'm not the one who has to negotiate deals, so maybe it's a nightmare behind the scenes. I don't ever get to see it. And if that's the case, great. I hope it continues to be that way. But there's been, you know, they'll always come by set and be nice and friendly. But I think it is a great, you can always see the difference between a guild show and a non-guild show.
What do you think that is?
I think that in general, and I'm sure there's a trillion ways, places where this hasn't been true. In general, if you want to do a show guild, you can make it work. And a lot of the times when people don't want to do a show guild, especially Directors Guild, it's not going to be a great experience. It's different when it's, oh, our friends are doing something, or it's a student film.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a lot of times like, oh, they are looking for ways to not pay you. And I don't even think it's a conscious like, oh, I'm twirling my mustache and I'm going to screw all the creatives. I don't think it's that. I think they're looking for ways to scrimp, and that tends to be shitty. And I think that can be, a bummer for people. You've heard me say this, but my advice is to get in a guild as fast as you can because they exist to protect you. And now as streaming and the web, and there's more companies doing content than you've ever heard of, popping up everywhere, it's incredibly difficult to keep track of who's not going to fuck you over. And back in the day, it's like, oh, it's NBC. They'll probably pay me, right? And now it's very different to tell, like, okay, like, Jash is a legitimate company, but then this other thing sounds like Jash. What is that?
You know, sure.
And that is somewhere that the guild can really help you because there's a lot of people, I think, in the web world who like are actively more than happy to take advantage of people's desire to create things and to work.
Sure. It's also a matter of there's so much content.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's like, we're living in an age of like just such an enormous volume of content that's being created that obviously there are going to be good people doing that. And there are going to be bad people who are doing that too.
And I think there's a ton of very good intentioned, like one of the things that Funny or Die kept running into was the whole thing about Funny or Die and the charm. And one of the great things about it when I was there was that you could just do it.
Yeah.
You went out and you made something and it was fun and you would work with people that you would never fucking get a chance to work with ever again. Like big star, talented people. You could just make this thing. And that was awesome. That model meant that you did super cheap. Those were like non-union little two-minute shorts. They were fun at the time, but it wasn't sort of like people weren't really paying for them. They had banner ads around, but so you're like, yeah, okay, there was nothing wrong with that. And then what almost all of those sorts of web comedy and web content companies run into, I think College Humor ran into this a bit too, is that, and they go, great, next step, TV and movies, and we're going to do it the same way. We're going to take that same attitude over, and then people go, no.
Right.
No. This is on TV now. It's different. No, this is a movie. Now we can't have togos for craft services. Fuck you. And everyone hits that big bump.
Sure.
And I know that that wasn't sort of like, there's no funny or die scheming to be like, we're not going to pay people. It's just sort of like, this is great. We get to make funny shit. That's all we want to do. Mm-hmm. But there are times where that can trip people up. And especially for people just sort of entering into the world, the fear is that that becomes the norm. And then the shitty people, the bad actors who aren't sincerely interested in making good stuff, then they get to sort of have their cake.
Yeah, it's definitely like a confusing, I think that the whole industry is kind of confused about like where it's going, right? Mm-hmm. And it seems to like shift constantly.
Yeah.
And so it's very shaky ground.
Yeah.
You're also Writers Guild, I assume.
Yeah.
And SAG as well.
Yep.
So you're triple union threat.
Triple union threat. Yeah. 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 SAG card doesn't get much use these days, but the other two.
Yeah. When you're working, what's your contribution once a project is in the edit? How's that for you?
Normally, it depends on what the thing is. Like, because sometimes they want more, whoever you're working with wants more input than other times.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, what the system is have the editor do a pass and then work with the editor and get to a pass that I'll normally leave fat. I know that the producers are going to and the writers are going to want to see this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it should probably come out because we have to lose 5 minutes, but I'll leave it in now with the little note of, hey, this is prime for cutting, I think. And like working with the editor a little bit just to get to like, yeah, that's something that I think is good in a little bit of a rough state and then pass it off to them. And I've been lucky again to be able to work on a lot of shows like Hot Wives where they've, you know, I think valued my opinion and kept me around to chime in on stuff. Children's is a show where like I'll work with the editor and then once my cut's off, then it's for the producers to do with what they will.
Yep.
The show I'm working on now, which is an improvised show, the Bajillion Dollar Property show, actually right after this, I'm going to go watch some cuts of scenes for the first time. And that's, I actually don't know how this is going to go. It's unique because it's new editors working in a show that is very improvised, mm-hmm. where this is what the scene is about and that's all we have. And so I'm going to go learn what this is going to be because I honestly don't know. Because it won't just be the normal thing of where they follow the script. There's an mm-hmm. element where they have to, off the scripty notes, and then their own sense of humor go, I think this is the funny version of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll have to see if that's right or not.
Do you like that part of the process?
It's not my favorite. I get bored just, you know what I mean? Like, it's the being on set and working with actors is my favorite part.
Yeah.
The editing part is not really my favorite, especially once it gets down into the sort of nitpickery.
Yeah.
Like that first pass of like, okay, great, we can slash this, great, change this, move that around, I don't like that take, that stuff's okay. And then when it starts to get into like, 5 seconds, okay. I guess if we just cut one really out of what he said, his line, like that I find tedious.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also when I start to fully doubt myself because by the 30th time, there's nothing that makes me laugh anymore. I go, oh, well, I fucked a terrible episode of television. They're all going to hate me.
Yeah.
This is the last job I'll ever have. And then normally that ends up not being true.
And it works out.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you have to get to the point where you hate it.
Yeah. Just truly.
That's when you know you've really, when it's done.
It really is. I think every time, every project at one point, I'll go like,
fuck this.
Send it off to them and they're going to be so mad. I ruined it. Their script was funny and I ruined it.
Yeah. Very cool. And I guess the last thing I just wanted to just touch base on, so you mentioned before, you've done a lot of sort of like pilot, like development work.
Mm-hmm.
I guess like for you, how does that process, like, how do you find that process? Is that?
Based on no one having ever seen any of this stuff, it can be very frustrating.
Yeah. I can bet.
I've done with Convoy, we've done 4 different forms of pilots. We shot one for Comedy Central. We wrote one for FX. We did a presentation for Amazon, and we wrote one for AMC.
Yeah.
And then with Deborah Tarica, I wrote a pilot for Disney XD. And it can be very – there's something very exciting about pitching. I like pitching. I actually think pitching is a blast. It's very fun, especially when you have other people with you. Like, so if I'm doing with Deborah or if I'm doing with the Convoy guys, then it's a little show, and you put it on, you make them laugh, and if they like the idea, great, and if not, that's okay. That part I like. And then the writing I really like. I've been very fortunate to not have worked with a bunch of like shitty execs. Like, you always hear the horror stories, oh, they ruined my idea. And I haven't run into that very much. Bad part is how long it takes. And then when the no happens, you're like, oh, well, that was just a year. Okay,
right.
Great. And then, I mean, I guess we'll just try to figure out something else. And that can be crushing. Or the Convoy AMC thing, which I really had a lot of faith in. I really, really dug it. So I think we're going to do this. I think I let myself get my hopes up on that, which is a rookie mistake. And then, you know, they end up not doing any comedies, which I guess is better than them doing all the comedies but mine. But then that was sort of like, oh, well, then you have a little bit of a mourning period. And then you go like, well, I'll probably never get paid to do anything ever again. And then you go, okay, well, now I have another idea that I can move on.
Yeah.
But it can be very, very, very frustrating as you go through.
Yeah.
And you think you're doing a good job. And then sometimes, it doesn't turn out great. Other times, there's literally nothing you could do.
Yeah.
It was completely outside of your hands. And that's the thing that kind of kills me. I'd rather have it be, I don't know, there's something more satisfying about like, yeah, you know what? I did do a bad job. Okay, good choice. As opposed to being like, well, man, so I guess if we had been a slightly different timing, maybe we would have made that thing.
It's just like, it's the sort of thing where it's like, for people who want to be like making,
mm-hmm.
that process can just be like really just like kind of like soul crushing in a way, because it's so exciting. The prospect of it is so exciting. And that's why you keep going back to it.
Yeah.
But the idea that it doesn't actually get seen the light of day
is really tough. I think it's one of the reasons that I can't imagine, I still do Convoy every week. I still do Cinema Lady every week. I still do as many shows as I can, really, because I'm creating something there. And I think the directing stuff, I've been very lucky to have that come. So as these shows aren't going and no one ever sees it, well, mm-hmm. but I still get to work on Children's Hospital, which I'm very proud of. And I still get to work on Cool Off Show, which I'm very proud of.
Yeah.
And like that sort of stuff is very helpful to me because I am still making things.
Mm-hmm.
No one knows what Convoy is because, besides our show, UCB, because none of those projects have gone, but I still feel proud of the work, the shows that we do.
Yeah.
And I think that's crucial. I think a lot of the people I know who really struggle with it are, it must be so tough to be a writer who just writes scripts and nothing else. And I think I would stop. I think I wouldn't be able to do that because I would need to have something be created that people can appreciate.
It's also, that must be like, that's also the feeling though, of putting all your eggs in one basket.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that dooms people, it's the same. It's a very similar instinct sometimes to that I got to be discovered. I'm so talented.
Yeah.
I just got to get that right person to see me, which I think is just fatally flawed. And it's really about, well, just make stuff.
Yeah.
And then if you come away with things that you like, that you're proud of, great. You're ahead of the game because most people never even get there.
Yeah. Last question I have.
Mm-hmm.
Sean Weiner, great guy, right?
Yeah, great guy.
Great guy.
High school friend, Sean Weiner.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Who is now very ingrained, UCB mm-hmm. New York.
That's right.
One of the best directors we have on the roster out there.
Mm-hmm.
You guys go back to... He told me you guys used to drive around aimlessly.
Uh-huh. We would go... We both went to high school, the Mary C. Wheeler School in Providence, Rhode Island.
This part's for an audience of two people.
Yeah, no, very few people. it was a very small high school. So yeah, it was very literally... Sean and I used to go, there's a thing called a water fire in Providence where they, thanks to a decades of, corrupt city governance, there's a river that they paved over, then they unpaved, and they were like, what we'll do to get people to come here is we'll put baskets of fire in the river and play Celtic music and then just call it a day. And that's what they do that once a month. And so people just go walk around the river and they would have nothing to do. So we would go down in high school to make money. And he would sell advice for a quarter and I would sell bad caricatures for 50 cents where I would ask the people like, okay, what do you like to do? And it'd be like these drunk middle-aged people and they'd be like, we like to have sex. And then I would draw a drawing of two stick figures having sex. And then I would just write their name on the bottom and people couldn't give us money fast enough.
Yeah.
It was insane. Like people were just like, this is amazing. And then he would give, Sean would give as sincere advice as he could muster for the real questions. Mm-hmm. And then just bit advice for whatever, you know, dumb, drunk, middle-aged, how do I get laid more? And often kind of insult them to their faces and people just loved it. We used to do that fairly frequently in our high school days, driving around in my gold Volvo.
Yeah. Yeah. Fun.
Yep.
I bring it up just because to me, I love finding those connections between sometimes it feels like the our two communities are separate,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think that that's true.
Yeah.
And I like to find ways to sort of like bring it together.
Oh, yeah.
And it's nice to sort of find an organic connection there too, because like, it just definitely seems like there's something about each of you guys that is in common.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's that sort of like sincerity and sort of passion for both comedy and for like film, essentially.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's also, you know, those two worlds too, between UCB comedy and the theaters too. You know, there is so much overlap. But for most people, it's a fluke of fate as to where they ended up.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we've spent at this point almost a decade trying to convince Patrick Clare to finally come out here, who I went to college with and is one of my favorite people in the world.
Yeah.
And I think it truly is, you let the people have an axe to grind to worry about the differences between places or comedy theaters or whatever, but really it's always just some random twist of fate that one person ended up one place and another ended up the other, but very, very similar instincts and interests. Really, they're all the same type of nerd.
And it's also if the philosophy of we're going to get on board with each other's ideas, we're going to say yes to each other exists, and like that should be able to exist despite which of the institutions you.
Oh yeah,
went
I think
to
that extends
well.
To the greater universe of comedy creation too, between UCB and Nerdist and IO and then the Pit and the Magnet and all of them. Like it's everyone's doing the same goals and wants to make cool stuff. And let all the I find the people who shine lights on the differences tend to be the least talented ones. The talented ones tend not to care. The people who are really, really, really worrying about this place over that place tend not to be the ones with the most going on.
Well, I'm on board with that. Well, thanks so much for taking the time doing this.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to the UCB Digital Podcast. Subscribe to this podcast and all the rest of our shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. Visit iTunes.com/UCB Comedy. And check out our videos for sketch and experimental comedy, YouTube/UCB Comedy. For narrative series and short films, Vimeo/UCB Comedy. And across the social media universe, visit us